Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of when Wael Ghanim was released from prison 11 days after his detention by the Egyptian security forces at the peak of the protests in Tahrir Square. Ghanim, then a Google executive, had been running the We Are All Khaled Said Facebook page, organizing events and galvanizing action all from the anonymity of Facebook. When security forces blindfolded him and beat him before an interrogation, he says that he prayed to God, prayed for a friend in Dubai to change his Facebook password. Time magazine named him one of the 100 most influential people of 2011 for his work during the Egyptian revolution. And while Ghanim is with us now, he just published his memoir, Revolution 2.0, How Power of the People is Greater Than the People in Power. While Ghanim, it is such an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. Thanks for hosting me.
Let me get back to that prayer to start our conversation. When you were in detention, you prayed that the Facebook password on the We Are All Khaled Said page would be changed. Why was that so important?
So I didn't want the authorities to access my email address. And the reason, the email address which I used for the page, and the reason is because that would put a lot of people in risk. One day before I was arrested, when Facebook was blocked in Cairo, we asked people, I created a form and I asked people to submit their emails so that we notify them with the locations of the Jan 28th protest. And about 20,000 people sent their email addresses. And I just felt that, you know, by having them access the email, they would be exposed to a lot of information that would put many people at risk, which is something I didn't want to do.
And since the site was We Are All Khaled Said, many people have heard of Mohamed Bouazizi, the Tunisian vegetable seller who self-immolated and is credited with catalyzing the Tunisian revolution. Just remind us briefly, who is Khaled Said?
So Khaled is a young Egyptian who was brutally beaten up to death by two police officers in June 2010. He's a middle-class, 30 years old guy, and his photo, after you know the photo of his dead body after after being beaten up, was spread online by political activists. And when I saw the page, when I saw the photo, I felt that we have to do something. We have to bring his case to justice, make it, you know, make the public aware of the practices of the Egyptian police authorities, because this needs to stop. And from that time, many people connected with the cause, and many people thought that this is unfair. And the way the, you know, the violations of human rights by the Ministry of Interior Affairs need to stop. And this is how the page started, and how hundreds of thousands of Egyptians were actively collaborating and working together on the page.
Since you worked for Google, you certainly were aware of the power of social media. Did you have any idea what a catalyst your Facebook posts could become?
Not really. And one of the main reasons why I shared my story is basically to tell everyone that I was a very ordinary person, and what I've done was nothing extraordinary or special as people might have imagined. And in fact, I wish people read the book so that they understand that they are capable of doing this. One great thing that internet brought to us is empowering individuals in basically communicating with the masses without barriers or without filters. So what we've experienced, or what I've learned through my journey, all of it is basically on the book, mainly the power of people, the power of when you bring those who believe in one cause together, start democratically soliciting ideas and basically agreeing on its priorities, and having people work on these ideas, on implementing these ideas, and the result of that was a snowball that was growing. Probably wouldn't have had happened without Tunisia, because Tunisia was such an inspiration for a lot of Egyptians. When we saw it, the first thing that came to my mind, for example, on the 13th of January, was wow. What for the first time in my life since I was born, I've seen an Arabic dictator apologizing for his, you know, to his people and saying, I was wrong, I'm sorry, now I understood you. And that was a turning point, not just for me, for, you know, tons of thousands of Egyptians. And the next day when he escaped to Saudi Arabia, it was very clear to Egyptians that looks like there is hope, that if we unite, we can go to the street. And here comes the first very logical post I put about Jan 25th calling for a revolution, is that today's 14th, in 10 days, it's going to be 25th. If 100,000 of us took to the streets of Cairo, no one is going to stop us. And one great thing about social media is that you get an instant feedback. And the feedback was enormous, and a lot of people started adopting the call and coming up with great ideas on how to promote it. So social media played a great deal for promoting Jan 25th as a day. And after that, the revolution was on the street. It was with the people, not with the, you know, on computers or online. The revolution was basically happening on the ground. Yet the internet also did help in basically helping the protesters to relay the messages to the world, not just to the Egyptians, but to the rest of the world. The videos that were taped, the audios, the photos, all of this made the people know exactly what the truth was.
Listeners, I know that Wael Ghanim is a hero to many of you. If you want to call in and talk to him, you can right now. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or communicate via our Facebook page or Twitter feed or on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But our phones are open if you want to talk to Wael Ghanim on the air. 212-433-9692. His new book, Revolution 2.0, How Power of the People is Greater Than the People in Power. And you write in the book that revolution is a process. It is not an event. It is not, for example, just the 18 days it took for President Mubarak to step down. So I want to ask about where you think that process is now. Did you participate in the rounds of voting, for example, which just took place in Egypt? Did you vote?
Yeah, of course. I actually voted for the first time in my life, just like millions of other Egyptians. So I think there are two sides of the story. There is a good outlook where you see that we have achieved amazing things in the past 12 months. If someone comes to me one and a half years ago and tell me, listen, in 6 months, Mubarak is going to be out of power. His son is no longer going to be the next president. In fact, he's going to be in jail. His government is no longer going to, you know, be there. The parliament is going to be dissolved. His party is going to be dissolved. And we are going to see 27 million Egyptians going to polling stations, which is almost 50% of those who have the right to vote, to basically choose whom they want to see in the parliament. I will say, you need to see a doctor. You need to be checked out, because that's not going to happen. Yet it did happen. And the most two critical things that have happened in Egypt so far is, number one, there is a large critical mass of young and energetic Egyptians who are very passionate about this country that are no longer scared. Dictatorships base their power based on fear, and use propaganda to spread that fear. And when you have a critical mass that is no longer afraid, in fact, they are ready to sacrifice for the cause, then dictatorship is not going to be able to come back in any form. That's one thing. And the second is that the most important is that we're seeing Egyptians getting more and more politically engaged. Parties are being formed. Youngsters are joining parties or movements. In fact, we have a 27-year-old parliament member at the moment. And Egyptians are generally becoming more politically active. This is something we missed in the past. There was a saying by many Egyptians that this country is their country, referring to the 0.0001% of those who rule us. And now this is changing, and everyone's starting to get involved and want to understand what's exactly happening. So that's the good side of the story. Yet the country is recovering from 60 years of military rule, which haven't ended yet, practically, as well as 30 years of dictatorship. We are going to face a lot of hard time, and we have been facing a lot of hard time in the past 12 months, and we are still going to face a lot of that hard time, because the change process is going to take time. Revolution is a process, as you've just mentioned. So the most critical, you know, challenges we are having now, is the democratic transition going to happen as we have envisioned or not? This is something we're all working on, making sure that Egypt has a new president before the constitution is being written and the army is, or the military rule is going to step back as they have promised us on 11th of February. And the second is basically the perception of human rights and the violations. We are still experiencing people dying in the street. We're still seeing that no real reform have happened in the way the police deals with the citizens of Egypt. And this is something, I think, one of the very, very challenging problems. And finally, the challenge of economy. This country is basically a country where almost one out of every two is living under the poverty line, according to the World Bank statistics. And a lot of Egyptians have been, you know, living under very bad conditions. And right after Mubarak regime fell, their expectations went very high. They hoped for a much better life, and they want to see Egypt bringing back what they have missed throughout their lives. So those three challenges are one of the most important at the moment. How are we going to fix them? It's something that all the Egyptians need to unite and work on.
Jack in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Wael Gonim. Hello.
Hi there. Yeah, I was inspired to another question, actually. I was wondering if you had the equivalent in Egypt of anything like public radio, and if there was cooperation with the radio with media at all.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes. Okay. And I'm interested in the question also that Jack called up with originally, which was that he has friends working, he says, in the Egyptian resistance, and he wants to know about the role of NGOs. And of course, there's big tension right now over Egypt possibly even charging with crimes 19 Americans from nonprofits, non-governmental organizations. And this is seen as kind of a shocking and very threatening development for people who apparently are not criminals, but trying to work in nonprofit, good government and relief organizations.
So for the first question regarding the media, one of the things that we have been suffering from in the past, which is one of the, what I called in the book, one of the tools of mass oppression, is the media. To a large extent, the regime was controlling the media. They had state-owned media, which basically perfectly mimic the point of view of the regime. And then there are private channels who might have their own, you know, freedom zones, yet there is a red line they cannot cross. Most of the private channels are managed by businessmen who have business interests with the regime, and therefore they know what lines there what are the lines not to cross. After the revolution, there have been some talks by activists to start campaigning for a popular TV station where it's owned by the people. It's not owned by an individual. It's owned by people to ensure its integrity and credibility. Yet this has not materialized yet, and I think it's one of the very important things that should happen in the country. I have also, you know, I should credit, and I did in the book, talk about the role of the media in general, despite the fact that there were red zones, but many, you know, many anchors and hosts were sort of pushing the line a bit. I believe in 2003 or 2004, it was impossible that you would basically criticize Mubarak in any private TV channel. And over time, because of the movements on the ground and because of the privatization of media and the inability to control the whole flow of information, and because of the internet, this became, you know, a little bit by little bit, it was happening. And this is very important, you know, the making sure that we have credible and integral media that would inform people about the facts you know, with a little bit bias, because everyone has to be biased one way or another at the end of the day, and not spread lies or you know, rumors. This is very critical. So I hope in the next few years we are going to see that, and I hope to see an Egyptian version of NPR where Egyptians are the ones who own it, and basically Egyptians are the one who make sure that it is neutral and it is not biased. And as for the second question, the role of NGOs is very interesting. It's a very interesting debate. One thing I have to say, one reason I wrote my book is basically because this was such a leaderless movement. There isn't a group of people who basically absorbed all the activities that took place and knows who should get credit for each. So I wrote my part, which had a lot to do with the internet, because I was never an activist and I was not on the ground. I hardly communicated with the movements that were working on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I was just telling the story from my side, hoping that also everyone would come and tell the story from their side and their contributions so that we can draw a big picture. I believe that, for example, in Khaled Said's case, one of the centers that helped in calling for justice for Khaled was called Al Nadim, which is an NGO against the torture, that supports the torture victims. So definitely NGOs play a critical role in civil society in general, plays a critical role in the democratic process. At the moment, there had been a lot of debates of the political involvement of these NGOs, getting into preferring candidates over others or supporting certain groups of ideologies against others. And it's very, you know, I would say it's very typical in revolutions that we get all these moments of confusion, and we start taking decisions that are not necessarily right. Mm. So I hope in the next I'm following the case. Yesterday I was informed of it, and I hope in the next few days justice will prevail and we will basically know the truth. We don't want to mix between the role of these NGOs that they are doing, you know, they are doing good for the society, with basically trying to practice what the old regime have done before, which is defame those who are against the regime, defame those who are against or create smear campaigns against those who are basically calling for change in the country. Civil society is very critical and important.
My guest is Wael Ghanim, the Google executive who played such an important role in inspiring the protests in Tahrir Square a year ago with his Facebook posts when he was in detention. His new book is called Revolution 2.0, How Power of the People is Greater Than the People in Power. And Linda in New Canaan, you're on WNYC with Wael Ghanim. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
My question morphs because so much of it has been answered in some respects, but I guess I'm embarrassed to say I'm a little more impatient than you are, and I expected so much from this revolution, and now I'm feeling discouraged. And just wonder if you think perhaps this military is also adapting to social media, and if they interrupt it, are you going to be able to sustain the movement? I mean, if they shut down your Facebook, if they shut down everybody's access to the internet, do you have a plan for that?
Okay, so let me tell you that all of us, as young Egyptians, were disappointed from the pace of change. We expected things to look to go much faster. We never thought on 11th of February that more Egyptians are going to die while protesting, for example. Yet, I have to say that over time, I started to think that we have to be kind of realistic. As I just mentioned, the country is, you know, recovering from 30 years of dictatorship, and it's not going to happen in 12 months. Whether we can speed it up, I think this is our rule. Our rule here is not to keep analyzing and or getting disappointed or impatient, yet it's to start finding ways and venues on how to speed this up. As for the question about censoring the internet, if the old regime have have told the dictators one message, it would have been that this does not work. One of the biggest mistakes that the regime have committed was cutting down the internet and phones on January 28th. The reason why is that because they sent a message to the whole population of Egypt that they were scared and they were afraid, and that those people, which are the protesters, are actually threatening to the regime, which was a very strong message for the protesters, because they felt, wow, when you are the opposition and you think of yourself as the weak player in the game, and you find all of a sudden that the very strong player is scared of you, that gives you a lot of courage. So a lot of people took to the streets mainly knowing that, okay, that is a regime collapsing, that is a regime that blocks communications. And I don't think this is going to happen again in the country.
We just have a few...
And I wouldn't put a lot of emphasis on social media. It's, at the end of the day, it's not the power of social media that made this revolution happen. It's the power of the people that made this revolution happen. Revolutions happened 100 years ago without having even a fax machine. So people are going, as far as you have a critical mass that is not, that is determined for seeing a better future of their country, and they are ready to sacrifice for that cause to happen, you are not going to be able to stop them.
We have about 3 minutes left. Let me touch some other things very briefly for some quick questions and quick answers. Some people here say now that Egypt has held elections, the Wael Gonim progressives have lost and the reactionary Islamists have won. Do you feel that way?
No, not at all. I took to the streets not to basically tell Egyptians whom to vote to. I took to the streets because I thought Egypt was, Egyptians were denied the right to choose whomever ruled them for 60 years, and they should start to be empowered. And I do respect their choice, and I do believe that whomever is in power, if they're going to start solving the wrong problems, they are going to pay its price by having people basically not choosing them again.
The We Are All Khaled Said Facebook page has recently embedded videos of the deadly soccer riots in Port Said. Is there any political significance to these events, in your opinion, or is it another sports riot that got out of hand?
Well, I have to say that this is the first time in Egypt where we see all these people brutally beating their, each other, and resulting in the death of 70 people. It's very hard to think of it as purely soccer riots. Yet, I personally like to wait until I see the evidences. The parliament is now having a fact-finding committee, and they have been investigating what exactly happened. But nevertheless, if that was intentional or unintentional, the role of the police was to protect Egyptian lives inside the stadium. And definitely, by having 70 people dying, that is, I would say, a crime. It's not just a matter of they weren't doing their job. It's a crime that you were responsible of securing this place, and then 70 people died brutally in such a very small period of time. It was about half an hour when all these people died. My prayers to all those who lost, to the families of all those who lost their lives, and I believe it is our job now to make sure that those whomever responsible in making this happen, or who was responsible for securing it and failed to do so, should be brought to justice.
Do you have an opinion very briefly on what's happening in Syria right now? It's obviously not as easy to even start the revolution as it was in Tahrir Square in many other Arab countries.
Yeah, we were fortunate in Egypt that I have to say that the army basically did the job and protected the people and not the regime. In Syria, the situation is horrible. I fully support the revolution. They had been oppressed just like the Egyptians for tons of years. And every time I look at the news coming from Syria, I get very angry about all these dictators who, at the end of the day, they only see their power as the most important and critical thing to clinch to, rather than the lives of their own people. I think that Bashar al-Assad is is gone. For me, you know, he's definitely leaving. Yet the real problem is, when exactly will it happen, and how many lives of Syrians, of innocent Syrians, are going to be paid for his, you know, for his regime to leave. But my heart, my prayers are all going to the Syrian people. They are our brothers and sisters, and we pray for them that their revolution managed to get Bashar and his regime out of power.
And finally, in about a half a minute, have you been following the Occupy movement in the United States? And do you think it's related to your movement, or just so different because the conditions here are so different?
I believe that, according to what I've read from the news, that it was definitely inspired by what happened, and I think it's very practical. We are, as human beings, we get inspired. When Tunisia happened, it did inspire Egyptians, because we thought of a role model, and if they can do it, we can do it. And by the way, Syria happened exactly the same way. A Facebook fan, you know, a Facebook page created an event and said, this is the day where we're going to protest. And the same thing happened in many other countries. I believe that what is evident now, that technology is empowering people in having many-to-many communications, in increasing the reach, in decentralizing mainstream media, and being able to basically collaborate together and coming up with resolutions and actions within a very short amount of time, right. Something that would have taken days, if not months, in the past. And this is one of the most critical challenges to politicians. How are they going to deal with this? How are they going to face the problems? Are they going to start thinking of censoring, or, you know, using media to combat the allegations or the demands? This is going to be completely new experience for every one of us, where we are going to learn and we are going to basically see it as it evolves.
Well, Wael Ghanim, thank you very much for coming on with us. And so many people have been inspired by what you did a year ago. The new book is called Revolution 2.0, How Power of the People is Greater Than the People in Power. And I understand that you left Google since then. You sound like you have a lot to say about politics and world affairs. Are you now going to be involved in that?
Well, I'm currently on a leave of absence. I started my NGO. By the way, I'm donating all the book proceeds to Egypt, because I don't think I should become a millionaire out of a book, out of the struggles of millions of Egyptians. So part of that money is going to an NGO that will fight poverty and help prosper education in the country, and the rest is going to the families of the injured people and the martyrs. And until further notice, I'm currently involved in politics. I did not mean to get involved yet. I'm trying to help as much as I can for Egypt to become a democratic state. And I think, eventually I want to go back and do what I'm passionate about, which is technology.
Well, thank you so much again, and I hope we can talk again.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for hosting me.